Welcome to the Engage Podcast from Blackbaud, the podcast for people dedicated to purpose-driven work. From nonprofit fundraising and finance to grant-making, education, and corporate social responsibility, we're talking with sector experts and thought leaders about the best practices and latest trends that will help you grow your impact.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and everything in between. And welcome to the Blackbaud Engage podcast. I hope you're all well. Thank you so much for joining us today as we take a little bit of time at the start of 2025 to really knuckle down and hone in on some helpful top tips for your people-focused fundraising. My name is David Upcroft, and I am a senior customer success manager here in Blackbaud Europe, based on a sunny Sussex coastline, although it's quite grey today, but hopefully by the time you listen to this, it will be much nicer for me. I've been at Blackbaud here for just over 3 years. Prior to that, I've held a number of fundraising roles, everything from community fundraising to events, major giving, trust and grants, and head of fundraising roles as well, at a handful of charities. And today, well, it marks my very first appearance on the Blackbaud Engage podcast. So thank you very much for joining me today. And whilst I'm talking about who is joining me here, I'm very pleased to say that for both your sakes and mine, I have a wonderful guest speaker joining me today. So some of you may well have seen a couple of webinar series programs that I ran through 2023 and 24 with my guest today. And I'm very pleased to say that I haven't put him off just yet. My guest is the ever insightful and wonderful Rob Woods from Brightspot. Rob has worked in fundraising for 25 years now and delivered training for nearly 20 of those, with a wealth of amazing deliverable projects, including his Brightspot Mastery programs, which are award-winning. He's an author, podcaster, and a man full of incredible insights. And every time I've ever seen him, listened to him, or spoken to him, I have come away brimming with enthusiasm. So hopefully we'll see just more of that today. Rob's major donor fundraising classes were genuinely one of the first things that I ever engaged with when I first started in fundraising. And it's been a real pleasure to work with him in recent times to hear so much more of his wonderful, interesting and thought-provoking content. So rather than me continuing to introduce him for himself, let's say hello to Rob. Hi, Rob.
Hi, David. And thank you ever so much for that very warm welcome.
Lovely. So today we are here to talk about the importance of stewardship and the value of that people-focused fundraising approach, why it's so important to make those connections, and how you can stand out to your supporters in a world where the cost of living is impacting a lot of donor behaviour. I don't know about you, but in my previous roles and still today, I always tend to look at the turn of the new year as the perfect time to review ways of doing things. There's something about a fresh page in the diary and the open expanse of the year ahead that helps me take a step back and review what's worked well and what I'd like to improve upon. Maybe it's because I was never any good at keeping New Year's resolutions that I would focus on things that were a little bit more outwardly focused. Who knows? But within our fundraising operations, why is the turn of the year quite so important? Well, I think there's a lot to be said for the collective cultural mindset of the new year, this definitive marker in the sand to measure from. And so when it comes to reviewing our stewardship of our supporters, is there any wonder that it's common for charities to consider whether they can improve upon last year to steer the tiller for the year ahead? So it's time to turn to my guest, Rob. What would you say are, say, three things that you would consider looking at when reviewing your end of year giving?
So I think my starting point to be lacking in ideas in many things in fundraising and in life, and including for stewardship, we have some good ideas and some good intentions. Of course, in practice, the challenge is when life gets in the way, what actually gets done? So it's all about what gets executed, what gets delivered. And the big factor in that is how you feel about, for instance, stewardship of the people who give to your organization. And there's various things that could affect our morale or how we feel about things in our life. But one of them, interestingly to me, is the words we use about them. And so I think if many fundraisers sit down and say, how could I improve stewardship this year? to certain brains, that'll really get you going. But for mine and many people I know, you know, what does the S word even mean? I mean, organizations need some words to use that sound objective and sensible, but it doesn't work very well on me. So words do affect how you feel. If I were to say, I think you are mistaken about that, you would feel one way. But if I said, I think you're wrong, you would feel in yourself different. And if I said, I think you're lying, that again would be a different biochemical reaction in your brain because of the different words used. And if that change, if the words I use to you affect how you feel, it's even more important the words we use to ourselves. So I would not plan this week, what stewardship things could I do? Or this quarter, what are my stewardship efforts? To me, a question would be, what could I do today or this week that would help people who care about our cause to feel really good about it? And indeed, what things could I do today or this week that would get them feel the amazing difference that their support has made to something they care about? Now, by all means, listener, change the questions. You could even make them shorter than that because mine are quite long. But I think, what could I do to help someone feel great about the fact they've given to this cause, causes my brain to go to a different place and a level of both enthusiasm and creativity compared to what's on our schedule for stewardship this week.
This is great. As ever, whenever I speak to you, the cogs are turning. But how would you say that starts to be implemented in practice? Have you got any examples of folks that you've worked with before?
Yeah. Okay. So my next one, it's a very practical thing you could do, which is look at your desk now and or your stationery cupboard and ask yourself, do I have any nice cards that I could send to donors who are generous or to people who do something nice for our charity? And our listener, there will be some thank you cards of some kind. And for some of our listeners, there won't. If you haven't got any, get some. Because what I've found is that a major barrier across a week to doing an extra little touch that makes someone feel good is not the good intention. It's just comes down to the practicalities of how long it would take to go and find something that I could send. Of course, I might just send a thank you email or even a WhatsApp or some other maybe more modern form of communication. But in this very busy tech world, there's every chance those won't even be opened or certainly they won't stand out. Whereas if someone did something especially generous, I often have the feeling I'd like to make you feel good. And I think, oh, I should do. And then because I haven't got the cards, it never quite happens. So it was Richard Turner at SolarAid who first shared this with me more than a decade ago. And he said, what we did is we got nice cards printed up and we made sure that everyone had a small stack of those on their desk. And, you know, it's not a fail-safe target, but in any given week, if we all aspired to at least send out two or three of those, each time it might only take 3, 4, 5, 6 minutes to write something personal to that donor who's just been generous or that volunteer, that board member who's just helped out fundraising. If the cards are on your desk, those good intentions get followed through just before you go off to your lunch break or whatever. And if the cards aren't there, I think they often don't happen. So that's point one, get some cards. But point two is quite a few of our charities listening do have some cards of some kind. But if I looked at the card you usually send out, would it stand out from the other cards that I could get from WH Smith? It's just generic. So the extra key insight from Richard, and then I've been teaching it on our Wow Your Donors course for years, is this will take a little time, but I promise it'll pay you back, is invest some effort on your own and or with your director in creating cards which really are next level, in that on the front is a photo or some kind of imagery, which as I glance at it, it gives me a sense of what your cause is all about. You know, in my sessions originally, I would show the SolarAid ones, where within a nanosecond of glancing at it and seeing two happy young boys happily doing their homework because they've got cheap solar light, and inside a quote from them or their mother delighted that this solar lamp has enabled them to their life to get cheaper and much better schoolwork. The card itself in and of itself brings joy and gives you a sense of the difference you made if you gave to SolarAid. So the downside for our listener is this is a project and it's an extra thing on your to-do list. The upside, it will massively cause the effectiveness of those cards in making your supporters feel great go up. And it will even truly make you stand out from any other charity that ever sends something, you know, handwritten in the mail. Actually, nowadays, there's ever fewer of those bespoke things, even though many fundraisers know this idea, often it tends not to get acted upon. But even if there were a few, just doing that will make you stand out. And if someone cares about SolarAid, they'll feel it as they glance at that card. Just one we had a couple of years ago is a charity to do with the theatre and enabling more disadvantaged families to make use of theatre. And there's a wonderful fundraiser called Gail, and she implemented this. And it was the main, I mean, she did a couple of other good stewardship things as well. But the main shift after going on my Wow Your Donors course was for everyone to have these cards. And at the end of the year, giving to from the mid-level donors, I think that was either at the £500 per year mark, or it might have been the £1,000. But mid-level donor giving went up by 19%. As a result, in that second year after doing this for 12 months.
I mean, that's incredible, isn't it? Such a small, simple act with such a big impact played out right there. It's encouraging. It's really encouraging that these simple things that sometimes can be very simply overlooked can have such a noticeable impact on the way in which we engage with our supporters.
Yeah. If I may, sorry, David, just one more recent one. There's a wonderful fundraiser called Emily who liked this idea. And it was December a couple of years ago. And she was thinking, I don't know what to do. I like this idea of making our cards just look really much better at telling our story. And I wonder if you could picture, dear listener, what a Christmas card would look like from a charity, you know, snowman or a nice snowy scene or something. Anyway, she wanted to bring in some way, the story of what's wonderful about her hospice to life. And then she remembered that every year in December, her charity arranges for some cute animal or other to be brought in at Christmas time for the children to pet and meet. And it just so happened that the previous year, some cute penguins had been brought into the hospice. So her comms team already had some photos of these gorgeous penguins on people's laps being petted, obviously without the children's faces. So, but no one was making use of them in this context. Emily put these two ideas together and she created, with hardly any effort on Canva, these gorgeous cards of penguins bringing joy to the children in the hospice. She created Christmas cards. All the fundraisers sent those out to all their supporters. They got, and she also wrote the story of the day the penguins came to visit in three paragraphs inside the card printed. They sent those out. They got some wonderful engagement and messages back in a way that had never happened before. She also, segmentation and prioritizing resources is also a really valuable skill in fundraising. She had 15 supporters who were giving at a much higher level, and she got some lovely wooden Christmas tree decorations made in the shape of a penguin, and she sent those out to those major donors with a nice little note. And lots of upsides to this whole project, including the effort of writing the Christmas cards, but and also a financial piece of luck she got was that 4 days after sending out the Christmas tree decorations in the shape of a penguin, she received a donation proactively for more than £50,000 from one of the people she'd sent this extra lovely Christmas tree decoration to.
Amazing. What an amazing story. And as we say, as we've been touching upon, those small acts, that opportunity to connect the cause and the connection and tell that story as much as you possibly can. You know, we are story-built individuals. We connect through stories, and that way of sharing that that mission through your stewardship and through your ways of engaging is amazing. So we've talked about some good. It's only right we do the other side of the coin, Rob. Can you think of any common pitfalls or mistakes, perhaps, that you have seen or heard people undertaking around their ways of engaging with their supporters?
I think one of them is, I kind of touched on it there, but the bit of our brain that says that if it's not perfect and or completely fair, I can't do it, it's worthless. And so therefore an excuse to take no action. So I have studied this pattern of the 80-20 rule in so many of the success stories I've studied in the last 20 years. The 80-20 rule being, or the Pareto principle being, that not all actions are equal in their outputs and the results they achieve. A few of them are dramatically more likely to bring big results than the others, in the sense that we don't walk on all of our carpet the same amount. 20% of the carpet gets walked on 80% of the time. Probably, if our listener is honest, they wear less than 20% of their wardrobe, of their clothes they own, at least 80% of the time, if not more. So you will see this all over the place in life and in companies in terms of where their profit comes from. A few customers tend to generate most of the profit. A few product lines tend to generate most of the profit compared to the other 8, 9, 10 extra bits and pieces, which just keep ticking along. And I see this pattern in fundraising income as well. So a barrier to stewardship taking place is often a notion that, well, I like the idea of these thank you cards, Rob, but you know, there's 243 people on that database. Oh, I don't know how I'm going to solve it. Whereas my colleague Craig Linton and I, he's an expert in individual giving. He observes that just because you can't send to 243 of them doesn't mean you couldn't send to just 5 or 10 this week. And actually, with the 80-20 principle, it makes absolute sense. You're so much more likely to be reinforcing relationships that could add up to a much bigger difference if you do start somewhere rather than do it to all 242. So whether you're a fundraiser who looks after people who've done a marathon run or some kind of community event, or you're in individual giving, whatever it might be, whatever the market, if you've got 50 people who ran the marathon for you, which 5 or at most 10 does all logic and instinct suggest they could and would donate much more than the other 10? You already know 3 of them because they always raise twice as much sponsorship money as everybody else. So just start with a list of those 5 to 10. Now my brain could somehow squeeze in writing 3 letters today, or certainly 10 by the end of the week. And if I don't think 80-20, then there's a really good chance that I won't get round to sending letters to any of those 50. And if you can see the logic of that helping us take action in the context of 50 marathon runners or fun runners, the same would apply to any other segment of your supporters. Just start somewhere and make 3 thank you calls today. Just start somewhere and see if you can forward a lovely link to a message from the chief exec, or a lovely image of a penguin, or whatever it might be. Just start somewhere and do these personal touches. And obviously give a little thought to which are the 5 to 10% where it makes most sense to start. But it's really, that bit is often much simpler than you would think. And certainly with the wonderful software tools and tech capability that Blackboard has, kind of segmenting and seeing the differences between in giving behavior and capacity between different donors is clearly very possible. So look for the top 10 or top 20. You will usually find it. And even if it's imperfect, it's okay. You still started somewhere and sent some thank you cards or made some thank you calls.
Amazing. Yeah. I think that's the key. You know, when we look at, sometimes when you start to look at these things, you look at the, what feels like the insurmountable task in front of you, and it's hard to know where to begin. And so just being able to chip away. My grandma, her favorite saying she always used to tell me and my brother as we were growing up is, you can't eat the elephant whole. You have to do it a bite at a time. And it was, as a 6, 7-year-old child, it meant nothing to me. But in my mid-30s now, it comes into my head almost every day when I look at the kind of the big tasks in front of me, or you know, how do I begin this project? Where do I start? And so I think that's a really encouraging thing of just find that starting point. Just be prepared to get started and just go into it and play around and see where it takes you. So one last one then for you, Rob. As we like to finish with some encouragement, what would you say as an encouragement to people thinking about what they can do and how they can take things forward this coming year?
One of my favourite tactics I've studied for the last few years is the idea of a thankathon, or if you want to call it something different, a dedicated thanking event, a special day or couple of days in which we deliberately put extra effort into making our supporters feel great. I did a podcast about this with a wonderful fundraiser called Alice Barley, and she at the time was at a fairly small charity, and their main type of donor, most common type of donor, was in the older age bracket. And as time went on, year after year, she was getting fewer and fewer supporters as that group aged, and therefore income was going down, and it had been going down for years and years and years and years. So that was a big challenge for her. She heard this idea of a thankathon at a breakfast club for fundraisers that I did years ago, and she went back, and the key crucial thing she did was she just went to her chief exec and said, could I pilot the idea of a special thanking day in a few months' time with your blessing? And the chief exec said, yes, that was a crucial thing. And then Alice went back and persuaded, obviously, her couple of colleagues in fundraising, but crucially also the board and people in other teams, not in fundraising teams, to get involved in some extra thanking activity on this particular day. Some of them were writing thank you notes in these cards. Some of them were making proactive phone calls. Alice had, put together different activities for different people to do from within the charity, and it all happened, and it had an extraordinary effect. People got energized by talking to people who generously cared about this topic, but B, the donors felt great about it. To be called up out of the blue and not even asked for any money, they said, this doesn't happen. This has not happened before. Interestingly, various charities have done this, and it's really clear that those that get the lovely extra thanking become less likely to cancel. So that's good news. But also there's always these extra bits of luck you get. Every now and again, you get a call that goes so well. And this one happened for Shelterbox. Someone on a different podcast shared with me. Someone had been giving £200 a month, and then after the call, he cancelled it and changed it to £400 a month. So you only need a few of those to really get on a roll and see the power of proactively reaching your phone. One of my answers to your question, what are the pitfalls of this stuff? I think a major pitfall, especially as trends change in our relationships to our phone, and particular how younger people now, their approach to voice, using the phone to make calls, a real risk is because we fear we might get it wrong, or we might be bothering someone, we talk ourselves out of proactively calling. Now, obviously, if you don't have GDPR permission and you don't have the phone number, then of course we shouldn't be calling anyway. But every charity I know, or almost every charity, has some people who do care and have given us their phone number and permission to use it. But I don't underestimate how strong the little voice can be in our heads that talks us out of doing that and wants to go to this safer feeling email. Another charity did this. It's one of my favorite stories. This fundraiser from a wonderful charity in Northern Ireland called Naomi. And she got on a plane to come over to day two of my course in London. And when she got to the course, she told this interesting story of this conversation she'd had on the phone. And the gist of she'd had on the plane, rather. And the gist of what happened was she was just chatting to the person sitting next to her on the plane. And they were talking about work. And he said, well, where do you work? And she said, well, I work for a charity. Oh, really? Which one? And she mentioned the name of her charity. And he said, oh, really? I give to your charity. And it's only really quite a small charity, so it's not well known. So he already felt there was a bit of coincidence. And then you think, in fact, come to think of it, a couple of months ago, I got a lovely call from someone at your chat. And in that moment, he remembered that the voice on the phone that had called him 2 months ago was the same voice as Naomi's voice, who he was talking to now. So, amazing. Of all the places to sit on the plane, Naomi was now sitting next to someone who she had proactively called in this thanking event 2 months before. Anyway, they got over the coincidence of this, but the key reason I want to share it is what he said next, which was, oh, I need to tell you actually, what happened that day was I was busy in London going to all these meetings. So when I got a call from a number I didn't know, I didn't answer it. And then when you called later on and I was no longer in a meeting, I thought, well, I better answer it. It might be important. And that second time I did answer it, and there were you not asking for anything, simply letting me know, A, have you got time to speak for a couple of minutes? But then B, letting me know the amazing difference all my donations up to that point had made to this thing that I do care about. And in the context of my busy, stressful day and what I thought were my problems, you cannot underestimate, Naomi, how good that made me feel. And by the way, all the charities I've supported over the years, not a single other charity has ever done that before. Just called up, not to ask for anything, but just sincerely and genuinely to say thank you and, you know, to make me feel good about it with no strings attached. And I could tell there were no strings attached. So I sometimes share this on our courses to somehow help us outweigh the voice that occurs in our head that, oh, what if they get it wrong? And what if I'm offending someone and I interrupt their day? It might be that someone can't talk to you at the time, but if you sincerely call with the intention of helping someone feel good about their generosity, it's kind of hard to get it wrong. And when it goes right, it goes unbelievably right, you know, as evidenced by people are so much less likely to cancel. And just sometimes they give again. In fact, after that plane ride, he gave another donation that very evening after that plane ride. So I guess that's my parting shot. Of course, it doesn't work if you haven't got the phone number. But if deep down, the listener has an instinct that receiving a nice call, sincerely offered, out of the blue, with no strings attached, would make you feel good about a topic you care about, then one of the most powerful things you could do for your supporters is be braver in actually, in spite of all the modern communication and the WhatsApp and the emails, human-to-human contact, true connection, true relationship, true appreciation, listening, give and take. That's the antidote to so many of the challenges in the modern technical era, is it's still about two people who appreciate each other and connect. So that's my parting shot is, I dare you, when you do have the number and the permissions, to try picking up the phone with no strings attached and to see what happens if you reach out to thank someone for the gift they've made.
I mean, I'm inspired. I'm encouraged already. This is amazing. I remember one of my last jobs before I joined Blackboard, words along that effect that I'd heard from coming to one of your kind of drop-in sessions in London. And I'd gotten into a new role, and it was an international aid charity, and I didn't really know the supporter base particularly well. I was trying to get my head wrapped around the supporters, and that message kind of kept coming back to me of just speak to some people. And it was quite locally based. You know, there was a lot of relationship, kind of friends on friends on friends. So it was lots of people who live near the kind of main office of the charity itself. And I picked up the phone to one or two people. I said, let's go for a cup of coffee and just tell me about your experience with the charity. Tell me why you connected, why you supported them, why you've continued to give so much. And the stories that I got out of it of, you know, we went on this trip and we went to go and see the projects in action halfway around the world, and it changed my life and I'll never stop giving. And just to truly understand that relationship that these people have had and to thank them face to face, I was able to do that. I was lucky enough to be able to do that. And it made a real transitional journey in how we could continue that relationship with those supporters. Exactly as you say, that ability to connect person to person is unparalleled in the world of fundraising, because we want that connection and we long for that connection. That's how we're built as individuals, as people who habit this earth. We are built to connect. And so it's an amazing thing for us to be able to do that. And I was always very, very grateful for that advice, because it made a big difference. And we got, you know, commitments for legacy pledges out of that, and improvements in regular giving, and that, you know, wholeheartedly, I believe that came out of that advice of just just to connect and to talk and to listen and to understand. So that brings us pretty much to time. So a very big thank you, Rob, for your time today. As ever, it was a real joy to listen to your thoughts. So for those of you who might have been inspired by Rob's insights today, hopefully all of you listening, I'm sure will have something that you can take away. A little reminder for you that we have a collection of links and resources in our show notes to the episode today, including links to Brightspot's website and podcast. Rob, would you like to tell us a little bit about those?
Yeah, if you like learning through listening, or if you like podcasts at all, then my key suggestion as a takeaway from today would be to check out our podcast. It's called Fundraising Bright Spots. It's got a pink logo with my face on it. It's on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and other places. And I've been going for 5.5 years or so now. There's 170 something episodes. They're always a half hour, so you can fit it into most commutes or a dog walk or something. And each time, basically, I've found someone who's done something a bit different and it's worked out and they raise more money. And we just delve into that story. So you get both the techniques, but also at some level, the reassurance that it works, or it certainly worked for that person. So there are a lot of stories and a lot of techniques there now to hopefully entertain, but also inspire you to do certain things a little bit differently. And if you are ever looking for some other resources, or indeed for some training, then there's lots of different things we do at Brightspot on the website there. So it's brightspotfundraising.co.uk. Lots of free blogs, lots of free resources, and all the different courses that we can arrange for your team or for a fundraiser to come on one of my big mastery programs.
Wonderful. Thank you. And a special plug for the Alice Barley episode, which is episode 103. If you want to go back into the podcast library from the Bright Spot Fundraising podcast, I encourage you to do so. You'll also spot in the show notes, we've got a couple of links to our collaborative webinars that Rob did with us here at Blackboard on mastering your major donor fundraising and maximizing your corporate fundraising, which are two really great multi-episode webinars well worth taking a look at if you haven't already. So do find those in the show notes. So that's all for now. So a very big thank you for listening to me, David Upcraft, and my guest, Rob Woods, Director of Brightspot, and for engaging with Blackboard throughout our podcast. Do make sure to subscribe, tell your colleagues and peers, and keep connected so that together we can help good take over. Thank you very much. Goodbye.